episode 144 of the A News podcast, which covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, see you at your favorite non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. What's new this week? Anathema, Volume 5, Issue 7. Contents include global insurrections, queer folks doing actions in a wave of vandalism and sabotage, a planned neighborhood watch list by a home security company owned by Amazon, what is up in Philly, some creative uses for lasers, a eulogy for Sean Bonney, who died unexpectedly, an interview with someone 10 years after the UC occupations that were, by some accounts, a major inspiration for Occupy, a response to a previous article called Property Destruction is Not Enough, an interaction with the Pinkertons, no longer detectives, now security agents, still bad guys, news about some bomb scares, and finally a bit about a local issue called End the Abatement, about property taxes, aka gentrification, etc., etc.
Summer in Smoke, via a site called Chuang, meaning to break free, to attack, to charge, to act impetuously. So, good start, presumably. First-hand accounts of what has been going on in Hong Kong, with some backstory and some lessons learned, or to be learned, or something. Quote, the shape of revolt to come! We will now identify a few of the essential tools used by the protesters to outmaneuver these advanced forms of control. The front lines are organized anonymously. People pay cash for SIM cards to register temporary phone numbers on encrypted messaging apps like Telegram, where individuals sign up for tasks like building barricades or disabling traffic lights. In contrast to black blocs in America, where affinity groups are based around trusted friendship networks, nobody on the front lines in Hong Kong knows each other outside the protests. This ensures a degree of security. If someone is caught, they will be unable to inform against other protesters, who they only ever meet behind masks and screen names. Labor is specialized, and tasks are voluntarily coordinated by Telegram groups containing thousands of people. Some groups organize to bear colored flags so that people in the back of the demonstration can know what's happening on the front lines, while other groups are smoke extinguishers tasked with using steamed fish plates and water jugs to contain and neutralize tear gas. Those who can't risk being in the front lines run communications networks from home, synthesizing information from people on the ground and disseminating it to tens of thousands of people via live mapping websites. Online forums such as LIHKG provide a platform for long-format discussion and voting on the strategic direction of the movement, unquote. This is well worth reading, especially the lessons, as these are folks who are dealing with the increased surveillance and tech that is in the future of the US, unless everything crashes and burns first. It also harkens back to resistance in previous times. For example, the use of metaphor in public speech reminds some of us of language manipulation, like Yiddish and patois, that was about hiding in plain sight.
Anti-Zionism, Analytical Reflections, from Machno. And the award for the most obvious flame bait of the month goes to, not necessarily because of anything the extremely brief piece says, which is in fact not much, but Judaism and anti-Semitism online, like many other loaded topics, is a call to arms for bullshit conversation, bad faith callouts on both sides, yes, it's usually just two sides, and lots of fun with deleting comments. This is a reference to a book apparently edited by Roselle Techner, called Anti-Zionism, Analytical Reflections, and published in 1989, arguing, quote, while anti-Zionism cannot properly be considered a form of anti-statism in that it does not question the existence of states as such, but only the legitimacy of one state in particular, I believe that the history and philosophy discussed in this collection of essays may be and should be of interest to those anarchists seeking a better understanding of how new states can come into being and why they do or do not prosper, unquote. It's unclear what the book itself argues, as this submission, while it remarks that Zionism is a colonial and state-building exercise using religion as an excuse, doesn't get into what the essays are, or even who wrote them. Machno apparently submitted this as a way to start a conversation, and probably it should have been posted in forums rather than to the front page.
Political prisoner Antonio Nieto Galindo from AMW English, quote, Antonio Nieto Galindo has been demanding his freedom after more than 40 years of imprisonment in prisons in Spain and France. He is imprisoned for bank expropriations. After several years in prison in Spain, and now they are preparing to transfer him to France, where he was sentenced to two life sentences without attending the trial. His statement, today, December 6, 2019, a holiday in the Spanish state to celebrate 41 years of the approval of the Constitution, I, Antonio Nieto Galindo, known as Antoine, imprisoned since February 9th, 1979, serving a limited penalty of one total of 50 years, 7 months, and 7 days, which I will leave on January 3rd, 2020. I need less than 1 month, but I will not be released, but extradited to France for being sentenced to life imprisonment with total fraud of the law by the French judicial system for crimes committed in 1978, knowing that I was imprisoned in Spain. Judged, therefore, in default, I am handed over to France by order of the National Court, Section 3, with the complicity of the Minister of the Interior, Minister of Justice, Police System. This OEDE, European Delivery Order, was not enough to me in perpetuity, now already 67 years old, suffering from prostate cancer and other health problems, unquote. He ends with a big hug for everyone. Write an anarchist prisoner today!
The Vampires of Romania, from Transmetropolitan Review. Definitely my favorite article of the week. This is a biographical essay from a, quote, Moldovan potato, unquote. Full of wit, vulgarity, and generally top-notch writing, the author reflects on being one of a few anarchists in Romania. Fascism, squatting in the UK, racism, and much more, all while keeping up an extremely endearing self-deprecation that actually adds to their analysis. Quote, once capitalism arrived, we had dozens and dozens of choices for our sensitive assholes, and life was supposedly grand. Some of the capitalist toilet paper was even scented. That's all capitalism is, in my humble opinion, a bunch of toilet papers destined for our assholes and then the sewer, unless you're in some Moldovan village. Out here, our plumbing is so bad we can't even bucket flush the stuff. We let the paper collect in a metal bin, then burn it at the bottom of our land. It doesn't smell very good, but fire gets the job done, unquote.
Google doorbell surveillance cameras from MontrealCounterInfo.org. In the interest of public information and safety, we hereby read this entire submission. Quote, recently, we went on a nighttime stroll and removed some Google Nest and Amazon Ring doorbell surveillance cameras from a couple of residential streets. These products, which one can easily spot at night by their blue or green ring of light, are popping up more and more in Montreal and elsewhere. The cameras can store recorded video on the cloud for up to 60 days. It's been well documented that Amazon is using Ring to build a private surveillance network fully integrated with police departments under the guise of combating package theft. On a positive note, these doorbell cameras make it easy to fight back against the giants of techno-capitalism right in our neighborhoods. They are easily removed with a small crowbar. It's suggested to have a buddy with you and or wear electrical insulating gloves as a precaution against the risk of shock from live wires. And be aware that the battery-powered camera may continue recording and transmitting even after being torn from the wall, while it's still in range of its home Wi-Fi network. The user may also receive a notification on their phone. Fuck Amazon, Google, and their encroaching techno-dystopia, unquote, with a crowbar.
Anarchists intervene at the Christmas tree lighting ceremony. From mpalothia.net, in solidarity with the squats that have been or are being evicted, about 70 anarchists protested at this public event. There's 16 seconds of video. Good luck and power to the squats.
Statement. 1 month since the popular revolt in Chile, from Black Rose Federation. A feminist and libertarian communist statement, and posted on ANews because apparently libertarian communist means anarchist now. And of course, there are pictures of cute young women with bullhorns. Pardon me if I get confused about which upbeat, activist, photo-prone organization put this out, although I guess the writing is below par for normal crime think, and the word worker is used a bit more freely. Quote, but beyond the barricades and mass direct action, there is another story. Through the destruction of hundreds of symbols of colonization in squares and towns, something new is being woven. Throughout Chile, slowly but surely, hundreds of territorial assemblies, cabildos, local councils, and community onces, literally teas, small gathering like a coffee meetup, consolidating a new form of popular power. Historical forms of organization by the working class are being reinvigorated, once encased in our collective memory. We are building the foundations of a new movement engendered from rage and protest that is both constructive and widespread. To coordinate and plan successfully, we need to develop popular unity from below, which is our primary task at the moment, unquote. This is not obviously to diss what is up in Chile, just that the spokespeople for these events are really consistently not trustworthy on one or many metrics.
Coordinated attacks on 30 state and capitalist targets in Athens on the anniversary of Greek insurrection, from AMW English. The headline says it. The statement put out quotes Sun Tzu and lists the institutions attacked. Here is the roll call. Eurobank and Sklavanidis Bank, Panormo Street, Bank of Piraeus, Corfu Street, Kipseli Eurobank Bank, Duras Street, Sepolia ATM National and My Market, G. Papandreou Street, Zagrofo National Bank and A.B. Vassilopoulos, Peace Avenue, Pefki 2 ATM of Piraeus Bank, Pantelis Avenue, Velicia Bank of Piraeus, Handu Center, Berska, Man, Minetti and Boss, Agios Yanis Street, Agia Paraskevi Retired Officers Club, Chalargos EDAP, A.B. Vassilopoulos, Sklavenitis, OPAP and Goodis, Thebes Avenue, Ilian Katsovolos, Iliopoli National Bank, Agios Dimitrios Street, Brahami Little and Jisk Yasonidao Street, Eliniko Bank of Piraeus, Marks and Spencer Sklavenitis, two security companies and one security vehicle. One can only imagine that Alexis would be proud.
Attack against Deutsche Telekom and Nissan from Berlin to Greece and worldwide, from anarchists worldwide. Five cars go up in smoke from companies that, quote, secure the rule of power and enrich themselves by it, including in Greece, where the current government threatens to evict all occupied houses and social centers, unquote. What does solidarity mean again? That's what I thought.
Letter to a Chilean about the current situation, 1 and 2. From Act for Freedom by Gustavo Rodriguez. To me, this piece raised the question of whether Trumpism has helped start and fuel the protests around the world. If the U.S. has served as a safety gauge for discontented people globally, then what does it do when that safety gauge is firmly removed? Just a thought. Anyway, this is worth reading, and if you have to choose which piece on Chile to read this week, this one wins easily, both for info and for tone. Quote, unfortunately, there are still companions who insist on the social nature of the contemporary revolt and maintain their expectations in a pretend and unrealizable in our day libertarian society that, as Alfredo pointed out in the aforementioned conference, I am convinced that even if anarchy were realized, anarchists would be critical of that constituted anarchy because that anarchism would be an anarchist institution, and I am sure that the vast majority of the comrades would be against that kind of anarchism. Unquote. That's what I'm talking about, right?
Three trucks owned by arms exporters ThyssenKrupp torched in Berlin. From anarchists worldwide. Folks in Germany are getting down with the torching these days. ThyssenKrupp makes warships and submarines, one of many German companies exporting weapons around the world, especially problematically to authoritarian genocidal states like Turkey. Again, the thing about everything being connected means that every target could be appropriate. So we have more choices than we know what to do with.
Anarchists attacked a mobile operator in Kyiv. From a2day.net, anarchists claim a burned-down cell tower owned by Lifecell in Kyiv. Lifecell is owned by a Turkish company and hence is fair game. Freedom to the peoples, death to the empires.
Audio and video, simile on resistance, repression, hip-hop, and creating new worlds. An hour from the final straw. Episode starts with Sean Swain commenting on the Trump impeachment, restating the idea that, quote, I make no distinctions between Democrats and Republicans, they both make good hostages, unquote. Next is an interview with Sima Lee, a, quote, queer Afro-Indigenous hip-hop artist and community organizer of long standing, unquote. Most of the conversation concerns Sima's new album, Trap Liberation Army, and the recent raid on Maroon House, a, quote, intentional and collective house ran by black queer women and femmes, unquote, and its relocation to Baltimore, Maryland.
Peter Gelderloos on the changing terrain of revolt from IGD, hour and 44 minutes. An interview with anarchist author Peter Gelderloos about a huge range of topics, the most interesting to me being recent events in Catalonia. While I would say this is worth listening to, it does present the trap of discussing a bunch of geographically dispersed and disparate issues that live on a geopolitical scale from an anarchist perspective that I've heard Peter fall into on previous podcasts. Although I certainly think it's useful to read and think on a global scale, I don't find myself believing the conclusions Peter comes to concerning global, quote-unquote, struggle.
Topic of the week, islands in the stream. My entry to anarchy had everything to do with attraction to the people I met who shared core values and to whom I was personally attracted, sometimes romantically, sometimes just by affinity. Often it was all mixed up. I recently had the opportunity to see a screening of the film Animal People, a documentary about the Shack USA campaign, which was arguably organized on anarchic, decentralized methods. I was reminded of how much face-to-face interactions played a critical role in finding my comrades. In particular, I was struck by the way face-to-face relationships led to the Shack 7 not snitching each other out, which was not universal to the Green Scare. Members of the Shack USA presented for the panel discussion spoke to why they didn't turn on each other. It seemed both intuitive to me and also like an echo of some nostalgic memory. This type of socialization now feels largely moribund, and I wonder how younger anarchists today make these same connections. I'm an anarchist of a certain middle age, and a lot of anarchists I found initially are now socialists, democratic socialists, or just boring liberals. This topic of the week is geared towards the younger set. How do you find your islands in the stream?
I really like this topic, actually. It feels really relevant to me, thinking about how I came to anarchism and what has sort of kept me there. And for me, a lot of that has been personal relationships. And I think, sadly, the answer to this question for me, at least initially, was college. That's where I found the people who were anarchists and who I first started to have these kinds of conversations with. And I'm not sure that I ever would have met those people if I hadn't gone to college, which I realize is kind of a paradoxical thing, because I don't think college is often a place where people come to very unique or interesting thoughts or actually find themselves often in any sort of meaningful way. But it was that way for me. And I definitely feel like, you know, I came to it in part because I met people who I liked and I wanted to know what they thought about things.
I mean, if I were going to put sort of a blunt piece of information in here, I would say that there was a time when anarchism was a working class movement. It was people who did brutal work for, you know, 10, 12 hours a day. And then at the end of the day, they would meet with each other and it would be in the context of their families and perhaps their ethnic group. Mm-hmm. So this is the story of the Jewish anarchists in New York City, maybe the Italian anarchists of the Northeast. It is not very much the story since the 70s, really.
Sure.
And so since the 70s, it is arguable that one of the strongest group of anarchists has been the people who have met each other in college and who have shared a class orientation, but it's a class orientation that we would identify with the peaks and valleys of what college has meant.
Right.
So many people who go to college, they get a 4-year degree and they basically work a very low-end white-collar job for the rest of their working life, or perhaps they get a professional job. Mm-hmm. But even that's not incredibly common.
Right.
How would you sort of describe your own experience in that sort of class-sensitive terminology?
Yeah. I think for me personally, it was interesting because growing up, I had a single parent, and so there wasn't a lot of money in my family. And just before I got to college, my mom remarried, and suddenly there were two incomes in our home. And it was sort of a foregone conclusion that I would go to college. And I ended up going to an Ivy League school where lot of people had a lot of money.
Yeah.
And for me, I took out an astronomical amount of debt to go to school there. And part of why I wasn't an anarchist at the time that I was thinking about where I would go to college, but I went to this school that really brands itself on being a liberal, sort of social justice-minded, progressive place where people are really thinking radical thoughts. And I was really attracted to that. I wanted that. And for my first 3 years, I kind of just did the usual college thing. And then in my last year of college, I started meeting all of these student radicals. And initially, the sort of initial spark for me was being critical about college, right? Like thinking about, where is my university spending its money? Like divestment campaigns. We were really involved in trying to get the school to divest from Israel. All of these things that student radicals get involved in. And I think what you're saying really resonates to me, because a lot of those people now don't have anything to do with radical politics. A lot of them that ended at that 4-year period, and they went on to, you know, mostly have professional jobs. And most of them, I think, probably did come from upper middle class upbringings to begin with. And so it's been interesting to see a lot of those people get subsumed into exactly what the topic is talking about here: political parties, electoral politics. I'm from New England, so, you know, the few radicals that remain tend to be syndicalists. And so people, you know, went off in those directions. But I would say the vast majority of them went in the direction of not being involved in any sort of politics or anything radical.
So with that said, would you say that you found your people, your islands in the stream, in this metaphor, in that since then, sort of just those people disappeared and you haven't exactly found a group to replace them?
Yeah, I think that's true to some extent. I think meeting people is much harder in my 30s than it was in my 20s. College was like a ready-made sort of pot of people that you could easily find based on like a very, you know, cookie-cutter set of interests. I think having now another anarchist project has helped me meet more people. But something I think is interesting, maybe the flip side of this topic, is that relationships with people drew me to anarchy, but also when those relationships fell apart, projects fell apart. And I think I'm, you know, a lot of the people in those circles for me stopped calling themselves anarchists when those relationships fell apart and when those projects fell apart. And that hasn't been the case for me. But looking back at why some of those projects fell apart, relationships were part of why they fell apart, right? Romantic relationships, sexual relationships, you know, abusive dynamics, people just not liking each other anymore. Like, that is part of why that whole group of people who were so instrumental to me becoming an anarchist dissolved.
Right. Yeah. I mean, of course, because I've been in the social circle of anarchism or the anarchist space for such a long time, it's not so clear for me, like, if a single project falls apart, that like the center doesn't hold. But at this point, you know, after sort of the decimation of the social spheres of the 2016 period and sort of the rise of Antifa and also the end of sort of critical thinking as a popular anarchist approach, has definitely taken its toll.
Yeah. And I think like there's certainly a role in this of like the cult, like call out culture and sort of like canceling culture, that I think encourages people to think of it as, if your personal relationship with this person is not what you want it to be, then like it's over. Right. That person is done. And when our projects are not firmly rooted in something other than our friendships with each other, if the call is like excommunicate this person, then how does the project or the scene or whatever it is continue?
Yeah. I mean, mostly I just think about that this is a sad sign of that anarchism is not turning out to be a great place for middle class or middle-aged people to sort of thrive. And you know, obviously we see it in all kinds of different ways, but recently I definitely have been feeling it. This person refers to the Shack campaign in particular. Were you impacted by that at all?
I'm not familiar with that, no.
Yeah, this is basically a body of people who were, we would call them anarchist adjacent, and obviously their campaign was an animal rights campaign. In particular, Shaq was a medical, doing animal testing sorts of things. And so animals were freed, and sort of the context was in that sort of space, which their actions aren't exactly in the anarchist space. That said, there were a couple pretty well-known anarchists that were imprisoned at the time. Josh Harper, he's the one who sort of still is active in the anarchist space. There's another person named Scott Olson who was an anarchist who was imprisoned. And these were federal charges.
Wow.
Because this was on the context of this brand new federal Animal Terrorism Act that I think was around.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I think this was around 2008 time period. So before the the Occupy movement, but definitely sort of after the Obama excitement. it's interesting that they refer to it in the same breath as the Green Scare, because the Green Scare was much more an anarchist-centered, anonymous destruction by night sort of a vibe. And most of the Green Scare activities can be mapped pretty directly to anarchists' interests, whereas the Shack was more, we'd maybe say, liberal.
Okay.
Not to be insulting, because plenty of the Shack people were totally stand up, and the people I mentioned are totally stand up people, and very much mapped to the anarchist space.
But they didn't snitch on each other, the Shack
folks. Yeah, that's an interesting provocation. I don't know the details of it, other than to say that definitely a lot of the Green Scare people did snitch on each other, and that's not even a controversy. And then the Shack people were maybe more identified with like the punk rock vegan scene.
Okay.
And that perhaps the advantages of snitching weren't as high.
Mm-hmm.
And also the moral fabric of what they were fighting for were a bit more intense, a bit had a different cadence than the Green Scare thing. Because I think a lot of the Green Scare people were threatened for like decades and decades of their life.
Okay.
Whereas I think the Shack people were more like in the 1 to 5 year zone.
Do you think the fact that perhaps, I just wonder if the fact that perhaps these people were more embedded in a scene made it seem as though like snitching on somebody would, I don't know if you think that played a role in that. Like, I don't know. Like, there was a larger social fabric there. I'm not familiar enough to say, but
there definitely is a larger scene in the quote unquote animal rights world. That Shack lived in, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to point to the Green Scare people as not part of a shared scene.
Okay.
You know, as you may or may not know, though, the Green Scare people at the heart of it had to do with one person snitching, wearing a wire, and going to a party where most of the rest of the people were at, and sort of like out of the party came the recordings that buried most of the people. That's a scene.
Sure. Yeah. To be fair. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. I wonder, I mean, the question about how younger people specifically deal with finding their islands in the stream. We were just talking about this, like people who came to radicalism on the internet. Like, I'm wondering if you have had like engagement with that sort of, I don't know, that was a new thing for me, is meeting people who came to anarchism, not because they were involved in an organization or a project, but because they had perhaps seen a documentary or read something online and haven't had, you know, any sort of actual experiences with other people as sort of the foundation of their politics.
I would say a good 50% of the people that I've interacted with over the past 10 years have been internet-based people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the thing that's incumbent upon for me is to be like, your enthusiasm is not my enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Your enthusiasm is not the truth. I mean, even just last night, I had someone who was really trying to interrogate me based on internet rumors they'd heard about LBC projects.
Okay, interesting.
And was very much like, I'm going to answer the question here that I think is appropriate to answer and leave the rest to you to sort out and figure out. And, you know, since you're reading so much, you can find it.
Yeah.
It does seem like rumors are worse than ever, but they've always been bad.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a lot of the people have incredible misunderstandings as to how many more people there are or how much activity there is based on the weird distortion effects of the internet. But, you know, you also have to just let people be where they're at.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm impressed. I don't know, to some ways, I'm impressed that people find these things on the internet and are like then motivated to go and find them in person.
For sure.
Because I don't know that I would have had that sort of engagement myself, especially when I was younger. Like, I just wasn't, I felt like I really needed that social element of like finding people and coming to trust people, and like that relationship piece was so important. I don't know that I would have just like, it's a lot of putting yourself out there. Like we constantly have people coming into our project who are like, oh, I read about this on Facebook, so I just showed up and like wanted to see what you guys are about. And I'm like, wow, okay. Like for someone who isn't, you know, maybe just started thinking of yourself as an anarchist, to like walk into a room and be like, hi, I read about this on the internet,
yeah,
is like bold to me, I think.
Yeah, I think that I probably would have had to come out if I only had the internet as a child. But of course, you know, I was 20 years deep before the internet really came into being.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Greg. The What's New is written by Jackie and Greg, and read by Chislin Greg. No editorial this week. We thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at
littleblackcart.com.
That place. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at
anarchistnews.org.
That place. And or
Anarchist News IRC chat room,
which is linked on A News, apparently.